You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Robert Kingsolver's most recent novel, The Lacuna, spans three decades in the life of Harrison Shepard, an American-born writer whose own life becomes entangled with those of Diego Rivera, Frida Kahlo, and Leon Trotsky. It's got great reviews. It was published in hardcover last year. Now it's been released in a paperback edition by Harper Perennial, and I'm very pleased that it brings Barbara Kingsolver back to our show today. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Now, like your protagonist, you've had your own brushes with history, haven't you? Including one when you're very young in Congo?
Well, I suppose. I mean, we all have our brushes with history every day, right? I had one in a cab yesterday. my own history is that, yes, I did spend a short part of my childhood in the Congo. I spent most of my childhood in eastern Kentucky, which is an equally dramatic place.
Well, how do you wind up going from eastern Kentucky to Congo at the time of the famous crisis, the power struggle between Patrice Lumumba and Joseph Kasavubu?
I was actually there a little later than that.
When Mobutu already had
right,
taken
power? I was 7 years old, and it was 1962. And I went there because my father is a physician. My parents are interested in public health, and they were volunteering their services there. But the novel that I wrote about the Congo had nothing to do with my own experience, except that I think being in the Congo planted a seed for me. I've always been interested in that place. But I'm interested in a lot of places and a lot of, I suppose, what the Poisonwood Bible, my book about Africa, and this one, The Lacuna, have in common is that I'm very interested in pivotal moments in history.
That's where I was leading.
Everything kind of turns on a dime. And this one is about I was looking for the moment, that sort of turning point in U.S. history when American political identity sort of turned on its head and we became interested in identifying ourselves as a new kind of American.
Well, there was a time when this book takes place in Mexico and the United States.
Right.
And there was a time when there was a lot more interaction between the two countries, when somebody like Diego Rivera would be painting a mural in Rockefeller Center and in Chicago, where the Mexican muralists were among the most admired artists in the world, and where intellectuals went to live, American intellectuals went to live. Much of that seems to have died.
Well, I think it's changed shape. I think there's plenty of interaction still between the U.S. and Mexico, and I'm particularly aware of this because for 20 years I lived in Tucson, Arizona, right on the Mexican border, and I spent lots and lots of time in Mexico as a journalist, as a traveler, as a friend. I love Mexico. And so when I decided to write this novel about, it's about many things, including the relationship between art and politics, I thought it would be good to use the canvas of these two countries because I see two very different attitudes towards political art. In Mexico, Mexico has a history of really celebrating its political artists. You know, Diego Rivera and the great muralists of the revolution are heroes.
Siqueiros did that anti-war painting.
Exactly.
The Museum of Modern Art used to exhibit but doesn't anymore.
Mexico paints its politics on the walls in vivid colors. Political artists in the U.S., or I will even say in the U.S., artists who engage who write about kind of political engagement, tend to arouse a kind of suspicion. We have a very uncomfortable relationship in this country, and I've always been interested in where that started because it wasn't always so. And I just went poking through history, and I discovered a time in the middle of the last century when which now we call the McCarthy witch hunts, when politics and art got a divorce. And I think that we're still sort of in the post-mediation period.
You include newspaper articles here. I don't
know
whether they're real ones or fabrications. But it reminded me of John Dispassos's The USA Trilogy, and he was a writer.
That's
who,
a great compliment.
Well, he mixed politics and art as well, although it eventually came back to haunt him.
But
was he one of the people you had in mind?
Of course. I mean, I learned everything I could about it. I did lots and lots of research and reading just in order to begin and ground this novel. But it's interesting you say that. You're not sure which articles are real and which are the inventions of Barbara Kingsolver. If you look on the very first page of the book, I have a list of permissions. And I chose to use actual articles from the New York Times and other sources from the era, from the 1940s and 50s, which I interspersed with, you know, fictional newspaper articles, reviews, and so forth, which I wrote, and that was really challenging to sort of create these many styles. But the reason I included actual articles is this. I discovered such shocking, unbelievable things when I went looking into this history of sort of how the U.S. suppressed political artists that I didn't want the reader to say, oh, she's just making this up. This is over the top. So the most over the top events in this plot are actually reported to you from the New York Times. And I paid for permission to use those articles.
Well, the real life characters here, Diego Rivera, Frida Kahlo, Leon Trotsky, they're larger than life people.
Not to mention FDR and J. Edgar Hoover. Right. But they were part of the canvas. I really looked at them as a kind of setting for my story and my protagonist, Harrison Shepard, of course, had to be purely invention so that I could take him through the paces and carry you through this plot that I devised in order to show you this unfolding, this moment in history.
Well, what got this book going? Was it thinking about the politics and art of the time, or was it that you had looked at a Frida Kahlo painting or read something about Leon Trotsky in Mexico?
Well, to ask an artist what got this going.
Well, often they'll say that they saw something, that there was a blue sky and one cloud or some, or they smelled something.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't think they're telling the truth. I mean, maybe there's a moment when we think that got me started. But the truth is, you know, when someone asks me my influences, I would say two: childhood, adulthood. To be honest, everything gets you started. For me, this novel is about so many things that compel me. For as long as I've been a writer, I've been wondering about this odd relationship between art and politics because it's something that people ask me about a lot. So that got me started. I've been fascinated with Trotsky since my 20s. And I've read a lot of his writing, and I think he's a really interesting character. And he's a lacuna. He's a missing chapter. He's a person who's been erased from history. So that got me started. As I mentioned, I've spent lots and lots of time in Mexico, a place I adore, and I'm very, very interested in the divergence between Mexican and U.S. culture. That got me started. Things that have happened in the U.S. that remind me, that sort of affect artists and affect free speech in the same ways that the McCarthy era affected free speech in the 1940s and 50s. That got me started. Birth. My mother gave birth to me. That got me started.
My guest is Barbara Kingsolver, whose mother gave birth to her, and she gave birth to a book called The Lacuna, which was a New York Times bestseller when it was released in hardcover, won the Orange Prize as well, now available in paperback from Harper Perennial. We have Shepard feeling rather displaced. He doesn't know whether he should stay in Mexico, whether he should stay here. He doesn't seem to be comfortable anywhere.
Right. The heart of every novel is a character with fears and passions. And ultimately, you know, this is a story I made up. So in order for you to turn every one of its how many pages, 500 pages, and learn all of these interesting things about history in Mexico and the U.S., you need to have a reason to turn every page. And that's always character. So I created the character of Harrison Shepard, who's a lost soul. He's raised by a mother who doesn't really want him. She lets him know she's sort of socially ambitious, and she's always hitching her wagon to some man who ends up on the wrong side of the Mexican Revolution. But her son gets in the way, and she lets him know that. So he spends his life looking for a place to belong, and that takes you into a lot of different places, interesting places like Frida Kahlo's kitchen.
Well, he also works as a plasterer for Diego Rivera, but
right.
when he
By
writes,
accident. Yeah,
when he writes romantic adventure tales, which is a far cry from the politically motivated artwork of Rivera, Kahlo.
Oh, yeah. He himself, my narrator, never thinks of himself as a political person. And that's really that's the heart of the tale. He himself doesn't choose a political identity for himself. And when he ends up getting in trouble later on in the U.S. South in the McCarthy era, it's not because of anything he has said or done, but because of the people he's associated with in the past.
An irony is that Rivera and Kahlo are active communists, mm-hmm. but if they had lived in the Soviet Union, they would have been prevented from making their art.
That's true. And they and Trotsky are very much opposed to the repression of Stalin. In fact, Trotsky, of course, is in exile. He finds himself in the household of Rivera and Kahlo because he will be executed by Stalin. He's a counter-revolutionary, an anti-Stalinist.
So you're somebody who believes that art and politics can be mixed?
Well, I join most of the rest of the world in that belief that art, one of the best things art can do for us is bring us beyond ourselves into places we've never been to understand the theoretical stranger. I mean, it creates empathy. What's more political than that?
Your last book, the one that brought you here last, was Animal Vegetable Miracle,
right.
in which you wrote about your family's attempts to eat locally,
mm-hmm.
grow most of your own food. The locavore movement has continued to continue to grow, but also remains quite controversial in some circles.
Oh, I didn't know that. It's
you should see my emails.
Oh, everything's controversial. I don't really see that. I see.
How are we going to feed the world? They say.
Yeah, and I see a world relearning to feed itself, and it's a very interesting movement that that surprised me when we released that book. I was stunned by the tidal wave of interest, which keeps growing and growing. But of course, I'm a writer, so while I still live on a farm and eat very locally, I'm on to the next book.
Mm. You also used to perform with the Rock Bottom Remainders.
You're bringing up all my brushes with history. Yeah,
well, we just recently talked about it with Dave Barry.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, they're still performing. I haven't come out to play for a long time. Maybe one day I will.
To miss being a musician? Because I get a sense that...
Oh, I'm still a musician. My husband is a guitarist. I'm a keyboard player. We still play. I mean, music is very much a part of my life, but I've gotten off Aretha Franklin's tour bus.
Have you ever tried your hand at painting?
No, I'm not a painter. Well, I
just write about painters.
Yeah, I write about everything.
And I'm assuming you're working on another novel as we speak.
You assume correctly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to ask you about it because...
Because artists never will tell you about the next
book. Artists never want to talk about it.
I'll tell you, I'm very excited about it.
Barbara Kingsolver's last novel, The Lacuna, is now available in a Harper Perennial paperback. And I want to thank you so much for being with us again.
It's such a pleasure.